to turn now to Bloomberg's June Grasso, who has a look at how the government can legally detain a U.S. citizen before letting him challenge his detention. June?
Thanks, Peter. It may seem like deja vu, the U.S. government arguing in court that it can detain a U.S. citizen indefinitely as an enemy combatant without giving him access to an attorney that he's asked for. A D.C. federal judge said the government was trying to do an end run around the right to habeas corpus, a basic constitutional right to challenge detention. The unidentified American has been held by the U.S. military in Iraq since he was captured in Syria in September after allegedly fighting on behalf of ISIS. Joining me is William Banks, a professor at Syracuse University Law School. Bill, set the stage for this week's hearing by telling us how Judge Tanya Chutkan has had to use court orders to get basic information from the government.
It really is quite an extraordinary situation. This man, we're calling him John Doe because we do not know his identity. He's been held by the government since September. He either surrendered or was apprehended by the Syrian Democratic Forces and then handed over to the United States and taken to Iraq, where he's been ever since. The government has not let us know his name, the circumstances of his capture or turning himself in or his current status, except to say that he's being held there. It's certainly possible that the government has the legal right to detain this man. The Supreme Court held in the 2004 decision called Hamdi versus Rumsfeld that the government may have a right to detain even a citizen combatant who is fighting for an enemy in an armed conflict against the United States. In that case, the citizen is no different than any other enemy if he's bringing arms against the United States. What's so extraordinary here is that the government has not afforded this young man an opportunity to contest the circumstances of his detention, that is, to have his day in court.
The ACLU has filed a habeas corpus petition on behalf of this unidentified American. What were the Justice Department's arguments against that petition?
The arguments really weren't legal arguments at all. They simply argued that it wasn't time yet, that they were still trying to determine what to do with him. There, of course, are various possibilities here, but the possibilities are stretching credibility now that it's been more than 12 weeks since he's been detained. One is that they were trying to amass evidence with which they could charge him in a regular civilian court in the United States. As many of your listeners know, the United States routinely brings captured alleged terrorists to the United States to stand trial, and that system works quite well. Second possibility is that they are trying to arrange for transfer of him to a third country somewhere that might take him with this man's consent, even though he is a United States citizen. That could be taking a lengthier period of time. And the third possibility is less favorable to the government, which is that they simply don't know what to do with this guy, whether to prosecute him, let him go, which is yet another possibility, or transfer him somewhere.
So the government admits that the detainee asked for a lawyer before he would go forward with questioning. At that point, wasn't the government required to provide him with a lawyer, which they don't want to give him through the ACLU, apparently?
Well, that's the standard interpretation that most of us would have for what we call the Miranda rights. When you read him his rights and in law enforcement interrogation, you're told you have a right to an attorney. But that right actually doesn't attach until the government moves to bring a case against you. So he's in a limbo now. He's being held. He's not being prosecuted. He's simply being held. So following the Miranda principle, he doesn't have that right to the attorney until the government takes the next step. And it's kind of circular because they say we're not ready to take the next step yet.
Now, let's discuss what is settled law and what is not. You mentioned the Supreme Court's ruling in Hamdi v. Rumsfeld that the government can detain U.S. citizens as enemy combatants, but they have the right to challenge their detention before a neutral arbiter. What are the questions that are still open? How long is too long, and who decides?
Right. Well, Judge Chutkan in the district court in Washington will make that decision preliminarily, and we hope and expect that she could be making that any day now, ordering the government to provide him a counsel who could then bring his habeas corpus case in a federal court in the United States. As I said a moment ago, once that case is brought, the government may well win it. But the important principle, of course, is to reinforce his right to have his day in court. The other things that are not settled yet is, of course, what he was doing, what he did that would justify his detention. Sometimes somebody captured is or turned himself in is not necessarily culpable as a member of an armed force fighting against the United States. There are facts to be heard here.
Bill, is this the same issue that came up under the George W. Bush administration, or is it different?
Well, it is the same in the sense that we're in the Hamdi case, we had someone who was allegedly, or originally rather, thought to be an alien fighting for the Taliban who was sent to Guantanamo Bay. And after some period of time, it was discovered that Hamdi had actually was born in the United States. So he was transferred to a military brig in South Carolina rather than held at Guantanamo. Guantanamo was reserved for non-citizen aliens who were unlawful combatants picked up in the so-called war on terror. So it's a little bit alike, but somewhat different, because this individual, of course, was presented to the United States in a combat zone and being held still in what you could call a combat zone by the U.S. officials.
Judge Chutkan said what the government suggests is an end run around the right to habeas. He wants counsel, which is an assertion and request that I don't think I can ignore. Is she signaling pretty clearly how she's going to rule?
I think she is. And she's, I think, been remarkably patient with the government here, trying to give it time to make more coherent arguments that would justify the continuing refusal to provide him counsel. I suspect we're going to find an order to provide him counsel and then a habeas petition forthwith.
In about 30 seconds, Bill, what about the government's argument that the ACLU cannot represent him, doesn't have standing to represent him?
Yeah, that's an expected argument, but it's really quite an outrageous argument when you think about it, because if they won't identify him so that he himself or his family could sue, there's no one left to do it but a public interest organization like the ACLU.
All right, that's Professor William Banks of Syracuse University Law School. Thanks. As lawmakers rush to complete tax overhaul before a Christmas deadline, we'll take a look at the closed-door negotiations that will shape the final bill. This is Bloomberg.